Welcome to Global Minnesota Podcasts, connecting, informing, and engaging Minnesotans with the world and exploring important international issues. For a complete list of programs and to join us, visit globalminnesota.org.
Good afternoon. And assalamu alaikum, as they will say in the Muslim countries, and Galabon accent, as they would do in Somalia. I'm so honored and humbled and pleased to be here with you in Oxford University. The title of our meeting today is called Conversation, the Masdawad. So I intend to make this, therefore, a conversation and not to make it a lecture or one-way presentation. So I will only make introductory remarks, and then I will let the conversation follow, and that people may have questions to ask and comments to make. But before I do that, first of all, I'm so happy that there are more, at least from the look of it, non-Somali Minnesotans. Because I was struggling with a dilemma whether if the majority of the people in the room were happen to be Somalis, would I then be obligated to speak in English? So you made my choice easy, so I'll make my presentations or my remarks in English. Thank you very much for coming. Before I make my introductory remarks, though, I have to thank few people that are not only instrumental in our meeting here today, but also to thank them in the role they play in the community and the services they have rendered to the Somali Minnesotans and Somalis beyond. I have in mind people like the president of Oxford. I hope I'm pronouncing the name of the school right. Mr. Paul. His last name is too long for me, so I'll live with Paul. I hope you don't mind. Mark told me, and I will thank Mark in a minute, but Mark told me, gave me the insight that Paul has been creating a space for Somali Minnesotans in Oxford for 13 years. So, Paul, we thank you on behalf of the Somalis who came this doors. And on their behalf, we are grateful to you, and please continue welcoming them. I hope they will not disappoint you, and they will have important contribution to make to their found chosen home, as Chantal Mouffe would have it. Chantal Mouffe for those of you who are not familiar, is a political, American political theorist, political science theorist. And she has a famous expression that appeals to me. She says, when she's discussing communitarianism versus individualism, she made the insightful comment that she was in defense of individualism and urban life. She said, people can create their own society. She coined the expression is discovered communities and chosen communities. Said you could find yourself without your own toys to a community. You could be black, you could be Somali, a Muslim, an African. That's your discovered community. But then you could also choose your own community. So you become Minnesotan. I don't think you can easily change your complexion, but you could choose to live in Minnesota and be a Minnesotan. And anything else you want to be. And I think it was a very perceptive. And so Somalis have chosen to be in Minnesota, many of them. And I hope they contribute to the society here. And thanks for those of you who are supporting that process of their integration, like Oxford University. I also want to thank Mark Ulrich, who has adapted Somalia. I haven't seen a more an avid advocate for the Somali people here in Minnesota and where I come from back in Somalia than Mark. Mark's contribution have already been shared with me by a friend of mine who is also a leader in our community here. But I was very happy when I met him that he does more than what I was told he was doing by Khadija to the Somali community. So Mark, thank you very much. And also the Minnesota, global Minnesota, who hosted this event today. I think all my time will be spent on thanking because I have many people to thank. So I'll be brief in my introduction. I also wish to thank Hubert Humphrey and the University of Minnesota for co-hosting it, this event. Back to my introduction, and of course, I want to Khadija doesn't need me to thank her because we take her for granted. She's a Somali leader. She's a leader in the Minnesota community. And she nurtured us. And I could not have done what I've been doing both in Somalia and since I came here if it was not her generosity, hospitality, and support. So please thank Khadija, Paul, Mark, Global Minnesota, and Hubert Humphrey and Oxford University for me. Thank you. Khadija, am I forgetting? Did I forget anyone? Yeah, you'll tell me later. Back to my remarks. I'm always asked the two questions that always come to me when I meet non-Somalis. I'm asked, why did Somali people, in their craziness, why did they choose Minnesota? They come from a hot climate, a desert area. They didn't speak English. Why, of all places, Minnesota? And I am asked always, with a little bit of, I guess, sympathy, sometimes a little bit of condescension. Oh, I'm sorry, how is Somalia? I mean, how are you doing? Are you, terrorism, piracy, starvation, poverty, collapse of state, how are you guys doing? So in my brief introductory, I will try to answer these two questions. So why Somalis to Minnesota? And by the way, I consider myself a Minnesotan. I have two children who are Minnesotans. My two kids are both born here in Minnesota. I initially came here. This was the work of Khadija, why I had to meet you today. But I came here to join the graduation of my son from Maramirai High School the day before yesterday. That is why I came here. So I'm therefore, at least you can say, half Minnesotan. So, but at least in my case, I've already known cold weather and snow when I came here. I lived many years in Montreal. I'm also a Canadian. I put on a number of hats, and I love Canada. So why Somalis to Minnesota? There are many many sides to the answer, but one that appeals to me is that a kind of a good omen by a famous Minnesotan, famous American, in the name of Hubert Humphrey. Hubert Humphrey, the late Hubert Humphrey, when he was a vice president of the United States, he was and remains till now the highest American official incumbent who visited Somalia, precisely on January 7, 1968, on a tour to 9 countries in Africa. Hubert Humphrey went to Somalia. So I guess we were returning the favor. That's why we came here. We remember, we followed the footprints of Hubert Humphrey. We said, where did Hubert Humphrey came from? And where did he go back to? So we were told Minnesota, so we came here to thank him. He had a lot of good things to say about Somalia. He called Somalia the most democratic country in Africa. When he was reporting to President Lyndon Johnson, that's what he said. And he invited 3 leaders from the countries. He visited 9 countries in Africa. The United States was developing a new policy towards Africa. And one of those leaders was the Somali Prime Minister at the time, late Mohamed Ibrahim Egal, who came upon his invitation to the United States, to the White House, in March 1968. So we have a relationship before the first Somali ever appeared on the shores of Minnesota. And when I shared this story one day when I was an ambassador to Washington, D.C., and I came to Minnesota in the company of my best friend at the time, the ambassador of Norway, United States, Carl Aas, and we were making presentation at the Humphrey Institute. I shared this information in that place, and I think the Institute, Hubert Humphrey Institute, went back to their books, and they found out, they recovered the gift that was given to Humphrey in Somalia, in Mogadishu at that time. I will, to the end of my remarks, I will share with you some of the insights that Hubert Humphrey, some of the recommendations that he made to President Lyndon Johnson, which are still valid today, and which may become your some of the tasks that we want to give to you. So that is why Somalis came to at least from my postulation. You could have other reasons. I'm sure Khadija and others will add to the list. The other question was, I said, how is Somalia? So I have good news to report without exaggeration. Somalia is not ridden or is not consumed by starvation, by droughts, by terrorism, insecurity, and piracy, and collapse of state. This characterization of Somalia have been true at one point, but they are not true anymore. But the narrative remains, the narrative continues to hold. So some of you may have read that Somalia is this terrible place that, you know, that has all these problems. I'm here to report to the Foreign Minister of Somalia that we have made a lot of progress on these fronts. And I'm sharing this with you, the good news, and I'm very optimistic about the future of Somalia, because you have welcomed many of us, and you are concerned with our well-being. And because we also want you to look at Somalia with a different prism, different perspective, so that at least we can develop a much deeper engagement and cooperation between Somalia and Minnesota. So Somalia is transforming, is defeating terrorism, and becoming more and more peaceful. Politically, we are becoming by the way, when Hubert Humphrey called Somalia the most democratic country in Africa, 1 year after that, the democratic government was overthrown by a military dictatorship. And since then, we were going down the hill. Now Somalia is back. We are standing on our feet again, and we are reconstituting our state on a more organic way. We are building state institutions that are responsive, that are effective, that are transparent, that are accountable to the people. And the whole world is acknowledging it. And since 2004, five presidents have changed by elections. So there are still challenges. The state institutions are still weak. They still need support. But considering the country was without effective state for 40 years, Somalia is back. And this is being acknowledged by the World Bank, IMF, the European Union, and everybody else who is and the American administration, successive American administration. In fact, the current ambassador to Somalia, Yamamoto, when he was acting as his secretary for Africa, he said, if 1% of what the international community spent in Afghanistan was spent in Somalia, Somalia would have been a model of success. And he said it may still be. He ended up being an ambassador to Somalia, and he's now sitting in Mogadishu and supporting the rebirth of the Somali state. On the economic side, Somalia is growing big. Somalis were already known for their entrepreneurship. Somali business people are dominating economics in the region, in Kenya, in Djibouti, in Tanzania, in Uganda, in South Sudan, in Zambia, as far as South Africa. I was sharing a comment that I heard from the president of South Africa, who said, how do we clone the Somalis so that we become successful business-wise like the Somalis? The highest building in Nairobi is being built by a Somali company. The highest building in Djibouti is built by a Somali company. The fuel that gets to Zambia and Tanzania and Kenya is provided by Somali companies. Somalis are genius in their entrepreneurship and creativity. Even in Somalia, when the state collapsed, the cheapest telecommunication is in Somalia, internet and telephones. The internet access in Somalia is 80%. In Ethiopia, it's 15%. Somalia is number three in telebanking. I be working in the UN, I lived in Canada, but I look dinosaur when I go to Somalia. Young people send money through the telephone. I still use dollars. So economic-wise, the country is improving. And we are working very good with the international financial institutions, and we are praised for public health, financial management. So I told you politically we are recovering, challenges remain, security, same thing, and the economic thing. We are opening, and this is the last point I will make, the region, Africa, and the region of the Horn of Africa is also contributing to this optimism of mine. When Somalia and Kenya and Ethiopia was always at loggerhead and in conflict, today they are cooperating and the two countries are coming together. And you can go today to Ethiopia if you are a Somali without a visa. The Ethiopian Airways that's going to Mogadishu, the Turkish Airways that are going to Mogadishu, there are Kenyan Airways that are going to Mogadishu, and there are Djibouti Airways that are going to Mogadishu. The Mogadishu Airport, the city that people may remind you is not secure, is the third busiest airport in the East Africa, after Ethiopia and Kenya. So Mogadishu Airport is busier than the airport of Entebbe, Uganda, Tanzania, Dar es Salaam, Kigali Rwanda, Djibouti, not to mention South Sudan, and even Sudan. So the economic activity is picking up. Much of that is due to the support of the Somalis in the diaspora, led by the Somalis in Minnesota. The money sent back to Somalia by the Somali diaspora is $1.4 billion. That's more than, according to the World Bank and UNDP, is more than humanitarian and development aid combined. So to conclude, to sustain that progress, or those hopeful signs of the Somali rebirth, we need the Somali diaspora to engage more in Somalia, to continue contributing, and to getting support from the institutions in the societies they live or they reside in. That is from Minnesota, from the United States. We need to see more Somalis and non-Somalis come and invest in Somalia. We need to develop linkages. We need to make Minnesota as an example. Today I met the governor, I visited the governor, and I made the same appeal to him. 70% of the Somali people are youth under the age of 24. And they lack opportunities, quality education, employment. And the country, my country is rich. We have the longest continental coastal line in Africa. We are a gateway to the Horn of Africa, a population that is half of the population of the United States. There's no reason why we don't have, to quote the Prime Minister of Ethiopia, there's no reason why we don't have half of the economy of the United States. So Somalia is open for business, and we invite Minnesotan companies to come to Somalia to invest, both for the sake of the Somali people, but also to improve their business opportunities in Africa. And Hubert Humphrey, in his recommendations, he said, Somalia needs strong state institutions, and he was advising his administration or the American president at the time, Lyndon Johnson, to help Somali state institutions to be supported. The first water system project in Mogadishu was built by the Americans. Hubert Humphrey signed that agreement, and he also advised it at the time. At that time, he said 40% of the Somali people are youth under the age of 30, and they need opportunity, quality education. He advised at that time for college-level schools, in Somalia. Today, those needs are still there, and I may put to you the same recommendation that Hubert Humphrey have submitted to President Lyndon Johnson. I put that recommendation to all of you, but particularly to the President of Oxford, Hubert Humphrey University, University of Minnesota, Hubert Humphrey Institute, and Mark Rich. Thank you very much.
Thank you, everybody. Thank you, Mr. Ambassador. Let's give you another round of applause. And I'll kick us off with just a couple of questions, and then folks from Global Minnesota will be coming around with microphones. So if you have a question for the minister, then please raise your hand, and then Global Minnesota will get to you. But just ask that you wait for the microphone so that everybody can hear your question. As Mark mentioned, I'm new to the Humphrey School of Public Affairs, but also not really, because I graduated from the Humphrey School. And prior to that, I worked for the State Department, where I worked in the Africa Bureau with Ambassador Don Yamamoto, and got to work very closely with a lot of colleagues who were very engaged with Somalia and rooting for Somalia's success and pushing for those linkages that you mentioned. One more thing I'll just note is that the minister's son is going to the University of Minnesota starting this fall, so that's pretty great. And my first question is, you've mentioned this disconnect between the narrative that people hear about related to Somalia, that, you know, that it's a dangerous place, that things aren't going well, and that it's a holdover from an earlier time. Could you talk a bit more about the conditions and the things that caused this transformation that got Somalia onto steadier footing? And after that, could you talk a bit about where Somalia goes from here in terms of building stability, security, better education?
Thank you very much, Molly. It's good to... Somalia is a small country. Population is about 15 million. But then wherever I go, I find someone who is familiar with Somalia. I'm glad you are one of them, you know. It's fascinating. We outperform our number, even though we have this narrative that refuses to leave us, this negative narrative. So the reason that we have achieving the successes is, due to the international community. We should acknowledge that Somalia has been helped by the international community. The UN, at one point, I remember when I first visited Somalia, everything was done for Somalia by the UN. The state has collapsed, people went into civil war, and so people went crazy. And the UN was the only actor in the country supporting. And I'm not saying this because I worked for the UN for 10 years. I subscribe to the noble goals of the UN. But I have seen what the UN was doing in Somalia. Then, of course, the American people, the European people, and other Africans, Muslim countries, Arabs, they were all supporting Somalia multilaterally and sometimes directly. But it was basically the will of the Somali people. Yeah. I participated in the first reconciliation conference in Djibouti in 2000 as a student fresh from university, as one of 60 Somali intellectuals who worked the grounds for the rebirth of the Somali state. Since then, we have been limping to the finish line. We are not there yet, but we have made a progress. All of that happened, as I said, with the support of the Somalis in the diaspora. So the by the way, Mo speaks Arabic. So there's a Arabic saying that says, "Masaibu qawmi in the qawmi fawaid," or what's bad for one is good for another. So the collapse of the Somali state has created the influx of Somalis to the outside, created a pool of Somali diaspora. When I visit countries, Europe, Africa, or countries, as a Minister of Foreign Affairs, everywhere I meet successful Somalis, business people, medical doctors, engineers, political scientists, and even those who are playing a role in their country. The Minister of Immigration and Citizenship of Canada is a Somali, is a friend.
He visited the Humphrey School, actually, just a few months ago.
There you go. I will not tell you how many Somalis are involved in the public life of Minnesota and the United States. You figure that out. Then, and other states of the United States, I go to Sweden, and I find this young girl who is a member of the parliament. I go to the African meetings, head of states, and I find a Somali who is a minister from Gabon, Somali who is a minister from Tanzania. This is true, it happened. So Somali people who went to the diaspora have contributed a lot to this progress that you're making. So largely it's the Somali people, but the international community has supported. And where to from here? Well, we can only go up. We are more and more Somalis in the diaspora, people educated at Hubert Humphrey school and University of Minnesota and Augsburg and other universities are coming back to the country and taking part in developing the institutions. And we want more of those because we have a shortage of qualified people and human resources in Somalia. But with the infusion of many educated people, business people from the diaspora, and also the people in Somalia who are very resilient, who have learned from their past mistakes, where the future is very promising. For the first time, we are building our state institutions organically. In other words, we now are working solutions to that. Our self-governance, which is where we have failed, is now improving. The state, the modern state, came to us alien. We inherited from the colonial, and we acted as colonialists to our people. Now we understand that the raison d'être of state is to serve your people, and we understand that we are doing that, and that will strengthen the legitimacy of the state and the trust people put in the state institutions and in each other. And therefore, we are very hopeful. But we need the support, not handouts like we have been given, but hand up support. And this audience and the institutions of Minnesota and other states like Minnesota and the American are needed to stand by, to continue standing by us.
Thank you. Could you share a little bit about the security challenges that Somalia has weathered and how in that specific area of security and countering al-Shabaab, how that has been changing and where you see that going from here as well?
Yeah, so the security was the biggest challenge to us. We brought it to ourselves. I guess largely due to bad governance, the Somali state has failed. People lost trust in the state, and therefore they got rid of it. We became the ideal place for libertarians. We said we don't want any government authority. People were doing their things. But then came these crazy people. I guess it was fashionable at the time, you know, to have Al-Qaeda, ISIS, ISIL, and Somalia was no different. It was a space waiting to be filled by, in the absence of a state, it was a space that was ready to be filled by crazies. So we had Al-Shabaab. Al-Shabaab is the Somali name for the Al-Qaeda branch of the terrorists in Somalia. And at one point, they controlled the whole country. And that's what gave us this bad image. That's why, I guess, till now, the current administration has put a ban on us. But we have overcome Al-Shabaab. The Somali people, with the help of the American government, successive administrations, and the generosity of the American people, and the European people, and the AU, we have a force called AMISOM, made up of neighboring countries, Ethiopia, Kenya, Djibouti, as well Uganda, as well as Burundi, have supported us in defeating Al-Shabaab with the help of the Somali force. The Somali National Security Force are not yet ready to fill the gap. So that's why we needed the support of others. But a lot of improvement has happened. Shabab are on their way to complete final defeat, but they still are able to create spectacular bombings, by planting a bomb here and there, and by committing suicide attacks, which still give us the image that of insecurity. But that is becoming far and less in between, and therefore we are challenges remain, but we are making progress on that front as well, security front. Yeah.
Thank you, Mr. Yeah. Minister. I have one more question before we open this up to everybody. This could be sensitive, but you are a diplomat, so you know how to respond to any question. How are things going with the Trump administration in terms of the ban, in terms of how you and the foreign ministry and the mission based in Washington, D.C. are treated?
We love American administration, any administration. Well, frankly speaking, the support by the American administration to Somalia has not slowed down, even under Trump. It continued. In fact, it was increased. Trump, loves military. He loves military in general. So he gave the responsibility of fighting Shabab in Somalia to the military. And the U.S. military is doing a good job at that. And he availed more resources to them. So on that front, we're doing fine. The administration could help us even more had the president did not engage in mischaracterization of the Somali people as a bunch of idiots and terrorists. These are not his words, but that's how it came out to the Somali people. So, and putting ban on Somalia, because we needed to engage with the... It's a time when Somalia was turning the corner and becoming a healthy body politic and was ready to engage the international communities when this ban on Somali people came, where Somali students cannot come to study universities like this one, where we cannot attract due to these bans investment, where Somali remittances that made it possible for $1.4 billion to go back to Somalia now cannot engage in the banking system of the United States. That is still a problem for us, and that is something that the administration could have for help us with. So, no complaints. We hope that the administration will see to it that we are just like any other society. We have our own weaknesses and shortcomings, but if given an opportunity, Somali people are very entrepreneurial and very grateful and very creative, and we could play a positive role in the international arena.
Thank you, Mr. Minister, and thank you.
I was not too diplomatic.
That was a very gracious response, and we're so thankful that you're here, and we're so thankful that this all came together. And I want to thank Khadija again. So, folks will be coming around with microphones if anybody has any questions.
Mr. Ambassador, how are things different for Somalia since Prime Minister Abiy Ahmed came into power in Ethiopia?
I love these kinds of questions because I love Abiy Ahmed. And don't tell the Somalis who are still in the mindset of the days that we, Ethiopia and us, were fighting in conflict. Abiy Ahmed and my president, and to be frank, the presidents of the region of the Horn of Africa are all, you can say, a new generation, with the exception of one or two. And they're all people with positive attitude towards you know, relationships with each other. So Abiy is, you can say, a catalyst for a positive change that's happening, not only in his country, but also in the region. Somalia and Ethiopia and Eritrea and Djibouti and Sudan, Kenya, all of us are coming together. I mentioned and opening new opportunities for our people and leaving old narratives of conflict and mistrust and suspicion behind. Abiy is a key player in that. My president and prime minister are actually, without exaggeration, are also joining hands with him and asking other regional leaders to do the same. As I told you, Ethiopia, Somali today can go to Addis without visa. That was not so 1 year ago when Abiy was came on the scene. Ethiopian Airways is going to register today. The busiest flight route is now to. I came actually to Chicago via Addis Ababa and to here. So Abiy is a dynamic leader, very ambitious, not only and hopeful, and not only for the region but for his own country. He opened it up. I think Mark and I were discussing a few minutes ago. He opened up the gates of prisons. There's not a single political prisoner in. In fact, he was questioned at the parliament of Ethiopia. They told him, "You're releasing terrorists, that means Somalis. And you're doing this and this, and you're not consulting." And his answer was, "You know, in our case, the state was, and he's the president of the prime minister of this, he said, we were the terrorists. We were picking up people from their homes in the middle of at night without court records." He says, "There's our constitution." He dared to say that. People were saying, "This guy is crazy. He's going too fast. His changes are coming fast." Some Somalis still ask me, "Is he for real? I mean, or he's trying just to, you know, put us to sleep so that he, you know." So I can't stop talking. If you start me on Abiy, I'll keep going. But for the benefit of time, I'll tell you in short that it has been very positive. And we look forward to his successes and success of Ethiopia, the success for the region. 100 million people landlocked, they could make. And then, by the way, 1/3 of the Ethiopian landmass is populated by Somali people, the Somalis. Somali region, which was also seen, you know, openness and reconciliation. We had a opposition group, liberation movements, they are called, who were fighting Ethiopia for 40 years, and now they are back. So, Abiy has been a positive to Africa and to our region.
Thank you. Ambassador Assad, I'm wondering, you talked about 70% of the young people, of the population. Can you talk about the successes in rebuilding the educational system and what the future challenges are?
It's a good question. The biggest challenge and the biggest opportunity for the future of Somalia is what we do with the youth and the opportunities that are availed or provided to this large number of youth in Somalia. As I said, there was a progress on all fronts, just like there was progress on the on security, on economic performances, on good governance, on constitution, on reconciliation. There has been improvement on the education front as well. But because of the limited revenue in the country, and because of still weak institutions, the quality of education is still very low. The access to education, although every Somali child wants to go to school, but the opportunities, the facilities are very, very limited. There's still security challenges that do not give people easy access to where the schools are. So there are serious challenges, but there is improvement. And this is where we need the biggest support. And also when a student is finished schooling, either from high school, even from universities, they don't have, since there was no quality education, their skills are not up to the requirement in the workforce, employment market, but also there's a limited investment, and that's why I was appealing to more investment in Somalia to create more opportunities for the youth. So education is improving, and the government is keen on expanding it and making it also improving the quality, and also building or availing vocational schools, you know, so that people they match the requirement of the market and the availability of skills. That is still a challenge because you need resources to do that.
Thank you. We have time for one more question.
Good afternoon. Thank you to Global Minnesota for this impactful event, as well as Augsburg University for Global Education Experience and the Humphrey School of Public Affairs at the University of Minnesota. Welcome, Ambassador Awad. My name is Irvin K. Miller, and I am an independent candidate for the 2020 general election to represent Minnesota's 5th District. My question for you today is, what can I do when elected to represent those in my district who identify as Somalian, seeking to make the United States their home, become integrated into the entire fabric of this nation? In addition, what can I do for those in my district who are seeking to return home to their land of Somalia? And finally, what can we, the people, do in this country to assist our global citizens in your country as well as the globe feel safe and secure in their homeland?
Yeah, Could you repeat the specific question too? Yeah, thanks. there's so many things there. Yeah.
What can I do for those who are here in Somalia, who are here in the United States, right here in District 5?
There are those who want to stay and make this country their home. Yet what I have discovered is that there is a sense of being isolated, and there's a struggle between those who want to call the United States their home and those who are here for what reasons we know of, but want to return home and call Somalia home. And at the same time, my question to you is, what can we as this entire nation help your people feel safe and secure so that they do not feel the need to have to leave one's home? And I cannot clarify it any clearer than that.
No, I didn't hear to begin with, but now I heard you. So I'll leave the first part of the equation to the to those who are here. They know their issues better than I am. People like Khadija and Ziad are here. My impression is that Somalis in Minnesota are doing just fine. Like any other society, there may be those who need a little more help. But from what I understand, I'm aware of the situation of Somalis here. Somalis are everywhere in the society, in the public life, the people who are being elected. We are just told that there was someone who was graduate from this school, who is now a representative in the state legislature. Yesterday I was told that we have more than 40 medical doctors, Somali Medical Doctor Association, Somali Bar Association. The number is becoming bigger. There are many students at the universities. Somali businesses are everywhere. Somali people are thriving here in Minnesota. If there are more opportunities provided, of course, for every society, we always seek to improve our situation. And I hope that more Somalis are given an opportunity, and that the gap is made smaller between those who have been already established and the new immigrants, not only for the Somalis, but for other immigrants. And I think that will happen as time moves on. Now, I can confidently answer to the last two questions. Those who want to go back, Somalia is ready for them. They will be very much welcome. Their expertise, the individualists are coming back with skills. They're needed very much in Somalia. They're coming back with resources, like they want to open business in Somalia. They're very welcome. By the way, as I said, it's the diaspora that sustained the Somali people by their remittances and also by their skills. I don't need to tell you that everybody who is now in the government or in the businesses, Somalia, mainly people who came back. I have been in Canada before I went back to Somalia, so I'm a Canadian. In the Somali cabinet, the biggest number of cabinet ministers from one country, from inside Somalia, from us as well, are those who came from Canada. 8 of us are Canadian Somalis in the cabinet. Our president is American. Mm-hmm. We lived in Buffalo many years. Our prime minister is Norwegian. He speaks perfectly Norwegian, by the way. And I can continue. I mean, they're from Sweden, they're from Australia, Somalis are everywhere. So the country was already welcoming and receptive to the talents of the Somalis are coming back, and they still welcome, and even now the time is even more opportune for people to come back and contribute to Somalia. Whether they want to move completely back home or whether they want to have one leg here and one leg, that's also a possibility. What can you or the international community do to help us even do better? That's what I was talking about earlier. We need more help basically in improving, in maintaining the progress. We need more investment. We don't need handouts. We have the support to NGOs, humanitarian organizations, and to the UN agencies fund some programs have been much help to us. They sustained us during our difficult times. But now it's about time that we do things for ourselves, and we are supported. That is investment, infrastructure development, institutional strengthening, so that the Somali state, the relationship, the positive relationship between the Somali state and the society that have been severed is now reinstated. So that's why we want more Minnesotans visiting Somalia, more Minnesotan companies coming back to Somalia, and more Somalis from Minnesota going back to Somalia. Thank you.
Thank you. Help me thank our two incredible speakers this afternoon, Mr. Ambassador. Molly Hayes. We can continue this conversation in the lobby, but they do have to clear this room because we are borrowing it from the next folks. But I want to remind you that on the back of the wonderful bio, there's some more opportunities to continue this international discussion. There will be more opportunities to continue our dialogue with the foreign minister. He invited us to Somalia, and now we have to figure out how we make that happen, and maybe in the wintertime is one way to think about this. I want to thank all of the staff that scrambled to help make this happen. I want to thank my board chair and all the other board members from Global Minnesota who keep Global Minnesota strong. And again, Augsburg, thank you for opening up this space and opening up your hearts for us and letting us get this conversation going. Thank you again.
Have you at the University of Minnesota to host you on campus this fall if you come back. Okay. And then-